This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, the one and only Gene Deckerhoff, voice Florida State Seminoles and the Tampa Bay Bucks. They get ready for the Super Bowl and a hoops game tonight. Again, Knowles tonight, Super Bowl coming up. Myron Metcalf will join us at the bottom of the hour doing his dog and pony, talking a little ESPN, ACC hoops, and all that other good stuff. And Wes, we are 24 hours away. This second, this moment, 24 hours from now, me and you will unveil the 21 ACC football schedule.
That's it. Pull up a chair. 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. We start at 7 with a two-hour pregame show. Just kidding. 9 o'clock tomorrow, we release the ACC football schedule for 2021. And looking forward to it. And we'll bring you the dates and the opponents for all 14 ACC football playing institutions.
So do you know something? We had 15 last fall. Do you know something?
I'm just guessing that, I mean, you've always said that Notre Dame would go back to its independence. I'm guessing we're just going to do the 14.
I can vouch, I can guarantee you right now at 9:01 a.m., I have no earthly idea. I have not seen the schedule. We eventually will see them, but as of this second, we do not know.
Right.
We don't know if it's Notre Dame, no Notre Dame, divisions, no divisions. We don't know. We have no idea. That's don't bother. Don't text. Don't. Hey, I know you guys know I'm planning on trip on the weekend of September.
I got a wedding.
We don't know. So don't bother us.
Yeah. Candlesticks make a nice gift.
That's what I
would do.
I do one wedding a year, and I can assure you it won't be in the fall. That's it. Maximize
until
one
both
a year.
Your daughters get married in the same year, and you work like a madman for 12 months.
That's true. But they even know not to do it in the fall. They know.
Good.
They know. I've offered cash for elopement so we can get rid of all of that, but I'm not sure they're going for that.
I have offered cash for elopement.
I have told both of them, I will give you cold, hard cash if you don't do it. And Amy Packer, my better half, is looking at me with the death stare going, oh no, we're going to have
weddings. What's the rate? What's the going rate for the elopement, by the way? I mean, if we're going to go here, we're going to find out at least right now what the initial offer on the table is.
It's a big comma. It's a big comma.
Is it two commas?
No. We're not making that kind of coin. Who do you think we are? Wait a minute. You know, when I get that
real estate magnet.
Well, when I get that
real estate magnet, your broadcast magnet, your marketing magnet.
When I sell Forbes house up here in Winston-Salem, get them into a better neighborhood, and maybe there would be two commas. But right now, there's one comma on the table for Gigi and Emmy. That's it. One comma.
Each. They don't split the money. Each.
No, each. One each.
Okay. For elopement.
Yeah. No wedding.
Okay. Good. Glad we got that out of the way. On the back end of the football schedule being announced at 9 o'clock tomorrow, we now know there's a financial offer to Packers' daughters to elope.
Being honest, I told them, you'd be all right. And Amy Packer is not going for it at all. Mrs. P is like, no. Big boy, you're coming off the hip.
Yeah, wedding.
Gigi's already told me, Dad, and Emmy's like, Dad, whatever Gigi has, you can count on me. I'm going to have a bigger one. So they're both girls. Are girly girls on this one. They want big weddings. So I'll be working till the age of about 93 is the way working out.
Yeah.
Two jobs a day till 93.
There we go. All right, let's get to the basketball because Deckerhoff is waiting to fire the cannons. All right, big wins last night. Let's start with Duke at home. They defeated Georgia Tech 75-68. Jackets had some early momentum. Duke had a double-figure lead. Georgia Tech cut it back. We went under 4 at one possession. 7 is really not indicative of how close I thought the ball game was. You see Mark Williams get the dunk there. DJ Stewart had a great first half for Coach K. I thought the second half became Matthew Hurt and Jalen Johnson playing as well together, Pack, as they had all year long.
Totally agree. I just thought, as I mentioned to you earlier today on the show, I thought Duke was much more aggressive on both ends of the floor. You didn't see a whole lot of that zone. They went man-to-man, got after it.
Yep.
I thought Coach K looked at the stats after Louisville and kind of made mention about, man, we're getting killed on the free throw line. We never go to the line. Our opponents are going there all the time. Look at the numbers from last night. Duke shot 22 free throws. Georgia Tech, 5. They were the more aggressive team. They attacked the basket last night more so than Georgia Tech, and I thought they did the same thing on the other end of the floor. For Duke, I kept telling you, man, you don't bury the Blue Devils in January. Everybody's, oh, they're out, they're out. Hey, we got a lot of games still left to play.
Yep.
But I thought Duke had to win the game. They need to start compiling some W's against teams of note, right? I mean, their body of work is the reason why the net had them ranked 90th going into the game.
Yep.
This was an important win for Duke, and as I pointed out also earlier today on the show, Coach K's emotion at the end, you know, high-fiving, fist-pumping afterwards, it was very almost out of character for what you normally see with Coach K after a win at home. He knew how important it was for his team to play well, be aggressive, and get the W, and that's exactly what they accomplished last night.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Blue Devils get Clemson on Saturday at Cameron. Georgia Tech welcomes Florida State to McCamish Pavilion also on Saturday in a ballgame available on ACC Network. Let's go to Pittsburgh. Last night, North Carolina and the Panthers. Tar Heels come away 75-65, had a big second-half lead. Really, Pat got a 10-0 run in the first half, kind of changed the dynamic of the opening 20 minutes.
Well, they did, and they were working from a comfortable margin and even expanded it in the second half, going up by 16. But you knew Pitt would make a run, and they did. They made it somewhat uncomfortable for North Carolina, but I was impressed with the Heels. Again, the big men are playing great. They're getting contributions on the perimeter. But the combination of Brooks and Baycott and Sharp, as I mentioned, 19 of 26 from the field. And the field included about everything about 3 feet from the basket. I mean, they really dominated inside. North Carolina's looking good. They've won 6 of 7. Their only loss was a tight, tight loss on the road at Florida State, where we pointed out the Noles have won 21 straight ACC games. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're a North Carolina fan, you are cautiously optimistic about the way this team has turned a corner and certainly heading in the right direction.
Yep. Carolina, big lead in the second half. Pittsburgh had a huge run, 13-2, but really couldn't get any closer than 5. And the Tar Heels end up winning by 10. You see the numbers on Baycott, 21-10-3 on 8 of 10 shooting, as Pac said. Justin Champagny had a nice night. He went for 21 points and 10 rebounds. Only got 9 shots from the floor. That was a concern after the ball game for Jeff Capel. They got to get him more shots. Pitt played with a toughness. They played with an edge. Carolina matched it last night. And that might have been some of the difference in that ball game. That and the efficiency of the bigs. And we'll go back, just like we said a moment ago, with Hurt and Johnson learning to play together for Duke, you can sense now that Baycott, Brooks, and Dayron Sharp are starting to figure it out for Carolina. And if that's the case, that might be some trouble in the second half of the rest of the ACC.
Yeah, I mean, teams at jockeying, that's why we always laugh about our accounting, because from a week-to-week standpoint, you'll see teams go up, go down. But what you're also seeing are the quote-unquote blue bloods now getting more into a rhythm of a season. I mean, Duke played their 11th game last night. You know, normally you play your 11th game when you start a season in November, you're around the holidays. I mean, we're at the end of January. So I think you're starting to see both North Carolina and Duke in particular, teams that you know have got players, they have great coaches, are starting to figure it out. I think Virginia, same kind of deal, right? Virginia a month ago is getting waxed by Gonzaga. Just look kind of out of sorts. You did the Kent State game. That's an overtime game. They lost to San Francisco. All of a sudden, the Hoos today, right now, look like a different team. Florida State, totally looking right. I mean, Florida State's been unbelievable since coming back. So we're starting to see the teams that are like, hey, guess what? Big picture, we're one of the top 5 teams in the league. So I think North Carolina and Duke, big win for Duke, but I think North Carolina is the one of the 2 blue bloods on Tobacco Road that look like they're kind of fast forward a little bit as far as the direction that they're heading in. Duke's still got some work to do.
All right, as we tend to do, I don't know, if can we go to some conference standings? We got an updated conference standings graphic. I don't know if we've seen it this morning. The idea, though, of where this league is, Pac, I know where we started the day, and now, remember, we're looking at that loss column more than we are anything else at this juncture. Pittsburgh now 3 losses. Georgia Tech 3 losses after losses last night. You still got Virginia undefeated, Florida State with one. Virginia Tech plays tonight with two losses. That's why that ball game with Notre Dame we spoke of earlier is so big. You want to try and stay in the neighborhood of those two at the top if you can.
That would be a good idea. Yeah, I would tend to agree with you on that. But that's why when you do accounting and you're going to go, oh, piece of cake, this team at one, this team at two, piece and then you're going to pause. You're going to pause and go, okay, now, 3 through 10, what does it look like this week? Good luck. Mm. I think we kind of know right now the bottom, to be honest with you. Well, you put them in whatever order you want. But that 3 through 10, all of a sudden, tonight you'll start getting some answers. I mean, where do you put Louisville? Where do you put Clemson? Well, a lot of it's going to be depending on what happens in that game tonight, one way or the other. So, again, teams are jockeying, moving around. Pitt, we loved a week ago. All of a sudden, you lose at Wake. You lose at home to North Carolina. You have a different vibe on Pitt, right? It's just the way it works. NC State, we talked about it. I haven't won a game since December 30th. Really haven't played. First home game in 18 days. Where are you putting NC State? I'm not sure where they are right now. You got to hold serve against a team like Wake Forest tonight. Virginia Tech, you got them as the third-best team in the league? Well, you know what? You better win at Notre Dame if you think you want to hit that three spot. So there's all kinds of stuff happening here. So, again, Duke, North Carolina making moves. Syracuse, still kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team, right? Sometimes they look make shots. They look great. Sometimes they look like, oh, my God, who are these dudes? So there's still a long, long way to go in the ACC race.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Myron Metcalf's coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Gene Deckerhoff, legendary voice, the Florida State Seminoles and the Tampa Bay Bucks coming up here momentarily to join us. And
I think he's ready.
Are you sure? You 100% sure about that?
I think so. All right, let's go live to Tallahassee.
Let's see what's going on down in the great state of Florida. Gene, ready for us?
I'm always ready, fellas. Hey, I'm ready to talk Florida State basketball and Tampa Bay Buccaneer football. Let's go.
Hey, can a man be allowed to have that much winning in one season? I mean, are you allowed as a broadcaster to have that much winning?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I believe so. You know, we suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune and COVID-19 during the college football season, but things seem to be working well. I'll tell you this, fellas, and you've talked to the coaches, you've talked to the players, but the most difficult of difficult seasons when we're involved in this pandemic. And I just finished recording a show with Leonard Hamilton. The Noles play Miami tonight, but then you go on a three-game road swing. Won't be back in Tallahassee for 2 weeks. And I said, it's a whole different ball game when you go on the road in 2020. And he discussed what you have to do, the travel, the spacing on the buses, the travel to the arena, the way you set at the arena. It's just a completely it's an experience that these young men are going through and young women are going through that they'll never forget. They probably don't like it a whole lot, but that's the way it is. I know this. I wear a mask. I social distance. I've got the vaccination. I've got the second shot coming, and I'm going to keep wearing that mask until they tell us this pandemic is over.
Hey, Gino, the other element about this is we're doing games in an entirely different way than we have in the past.
Yeah. Remote. Florida State football, Florida State basketball, Tampa Bay Buccaneers football, remote broadcast. Right. There's a little irony here. We broadcast Florida State away basketball games from Doak Campbell Stadium, the same booth that we broadcast football games in. Now, at home games, we're not on the court where we have been since 1981, since the Donald L. Tucker Center was built. So we're up what I call the concourse level, the mezzanine level. I have to take binoculars to see the numbers on the players. I mean, it's a different. And you got the plexiglass all over the place, and we have to wear shields. I don't know about you, Wes, but when you wear that shield, and all of a sudden, you know, you got to have a windshield wiper because stuff comes out. But remote broadcasting is a way. We play Clemson on Saturday. And I go to Tampa for the Green Bay Buccaneers game. We broadcast remote from Raymond James Stadium. And we have three different monitors and the All-22, the dirty feed, they call it, and for the NFL games. And our engineer says, Dick Vitale had some good things to say. I said, Dick did the game? Yeah, he wasn't in Tallahassee. The broadcast crews are not in Tallahassee. Yeah. You look over to the TV area, and there's nobody there. It's strange.
Gene, we've been talking.
But fellas, it's keeping it safe. It's keeping it safe, you know?
That's the most important thing. You know, Gene, we've been talking a lot today, and really for the last couple of weeks, about this remarkable run that Florida State basketball is on, and the really the incredible program that Leonard Hamilton has built. You have done so many games with Florida State. Let me ask you this. What has been a better home field or home court advantage? Florida State football through the years of when you saw Bowden and Jimbo had that thing going on for a while. Where Florida State in Tallahassee, man, Chief Osceola comes out, flaming spear, good night, y'all go home now. Or what Leonard Hamilton is doing right now in this run, that I don't care who you are, you come play us in the hardwood, you're going home with an L. What has been a better home advantage? The run in football or the run in basketball?
Well, I think both. You know, Florida State won 29 consecutive games, which was a record till Clemson came along and broke the record. But 29 straight football victories is a huge, huge number. That was a tremendous run, and I enjoyed broadcasting every one of those 29. Then here in basketball, we had the non-conference streak end at about 47. UCF came in here and beat us. We did not play very well. But the string of home victories against ACC foes is getting right up there into legendary status. We now are tied with Virginia with 21 straight home wins in ACC competition. We play Miami tonight. That hopefully it'll be 22. But 21 wins ties Virginia for third all-time longest win streak at home against ACC foes. Duke had won a streak of 22 consecutive ACC home wins. That would be second. We could tie that with a win tonight. And then 26 home consecutive home wins, Duke. And that's the top of the line. So a win tonight, Florida State wins 22 straight, ties Duke for the second most. And then, we go on the road for three games, come back home, and probably could notch a win or two there and tie Duke. It's just an amazing run. And, you know, you lose three players to the NBA. Patrick Williams goes to the NBA. Devin Vassell goes there. Both drafted first round. Trent Forrest goes to the Trent's playing out in Utah. And you lose three guys to the NBA, and you keep on winning. It's an amazing story of what Leonard Hamilton has done here. In fact, Florida State now is like number three, I think, in wins over the last 3 years in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Only Duke and North Carolina ahead. Virginia maybe tied. But Florida State plays number one. Leonard Hamilton's teams always play tremendous defense. Very seldom do the Seminoles get beat at the defensive end of the court. Secondly, he always finds a shooter, and MJ Walker is the shooter. And also, the third thing about Leonard Hamilton coach teams, he always has a couple of guys that are about 7 foot, 7'1", or 7'2". You know, we have three guys that are 7 foot, well, 6'11". Quincy Ballard is 6'11". He's still growing. He's only a freshman. But two guys at 7'1 and 7'2", Koprovica and Gnome. And in a discussion on his talk show on Monday, fellas, he's got two more seven-footers coming in his recruiting class. He's always going to have – I asked him, I said, Leonard, I remember 1978 when Florida State played Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. That game was played in Knoxville. That was my first NCAA tournament experience. I'll never forget that. But we played Kentucky, and Joe B. Hall had a pretty good team. They went on to win the national championship that year. And when we were, I was packing my bags, ready to go get on the bus and head to the airport. Phillips and Roby, the two big guys they had on that team, came walking out of the locker room. They were the tallest guys I'd ever seen. And I said, Coach, was Roby or Phillips, were they 6'7" tall? He said, well, he says one was 7 and one was 6'11". Yeah, they were pretty tall guys. So I think that's where he said, you know, if Kentucky can do it, that's the way I'm going to build my teams. So you get great defensive play. You get a guy that can shoot the hoop, and then you get seven-footers on your team. Maybe that's the formula for success. That's what Leonard's done, and you can't knock what he's done. I mean, we're on a four-game ACC win streak right now. 9-2 just moved back into the ranking. So, Florida State basketball is on a roll right now. And, you know, we won the regular season last year. Well, I'm speaking to the choir. You guys know that. Fans that are watching and listening know that. But that's a unique experience for a team. And they've come up with a name now. It's the New Bloods versus the Blue Bloods. And I like the New Bloods.
All right. I like it. Hey, I want to be the first to ask you what the experience will be like a week from Sunday having a Super Bowl broadcast in your own radio booth.
Well, that would be very nice, but as of January the 4th, the day after Florida State beat your team, Wes, the Atlanta Falcons, the day after the NFL took over that stadium, they run that stadium. By the way, if you're looking for a parking place, you're not going to find one. If you're looking for a ticket, you're going to have to go and borrow money. 22,000 will be allowed to attend the game at Raymond James Stadium. 7,500 of those 22,000 are healthcare workers that have been invited by Commissioner Goodell to attend, and he's picking up the tickets for those 7,500. A tribute to the hard work that medical personnel have been doing since the pandemic began last March. And I think that's great for the NFL to do that. But back to your point, our broadcast booth has probably been renovated. It's going to have some corporate sponsors sitting in it, and they're putting up plywood booths in the end zone, Wes, where we will broadcast Super Bowl 55. If you broadcast a game at FedEx Field in Washington, D.C., I think every announcer in the league will tell you it's the worst broadcast location because Mr. Snyder, the owner, decided that his Washington football team, they were going to have suites. So if you want to spend $4.5 million, your radio broadcast could be at the 50-yard line. But if you don't, you're going to be in the end zone. And you can't tell in football, you can't tell what line of scrimmage is until they put it up on the scoreboard. Now, I think we're going to have the all-22 camera, a monitor, so we can at least look at that monitor and say, well, the ball's on the 45-yard line. Okay, good. But it'll be it's going to be great to be at Tampa at Raymond James Stadium, but I will not be in my booth.
Mm. Hey, Gene, as long as they feed you, who cares? Man, as long as they feed you.
Well, I don't know how the food's going to get to that booth in the end zone. We're going to be opposite the pirate ship where the palm trees are. I know there's a beer garden there, but I can't do that during the game.
No, that's true.
I won't do that during the game. You know, but I'm not real keen on plywood booths. But I got a plywood story to tell you. We're playing the Miami Dolphins preseason game. And Bill Parcells had been hired to be a consultant, I guess it is. And we're in our booth getting ready for the pregame show. And Coach Parcells comes in and sits in the booth right next to us. And we look at him. He looks at us. He immediately gets up and walks out. 10 minutes later, there was a carpenter crew, and they're putting a big plywood board up so that he didn't have to look at us, and we couldn't look at him. That's my second plywood story.
Well, I'm going to tell you this: you've been hauling water a long time doing these games, and you are winning. You are winning at a rate right now, Deckerhoff. Not many ever have in this business. So, congratulations.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And you know, hey Wes, it's a 4.5-hour drive from my home to Tampa, Florida, 4.5 hours, and it's 4.5 hours back to my home from Tampa after the game on Monday. And that 4.5-hour ride doesn't feel like 4.5 hours after a win. After a loss, it feels like it's about 7.5 hours. So I hope the team keeps on winning. We won Super Bowl 37. Here we are, Super Bowl 55, and let's see how it goes. A friend of ours, Paul Kennedy, Wes, you know Paul. And Pac, you probably know Paul too. He sent me a message today, and it had a picture. Somebody must have sent it to him, but it was a picture of Tom Brady holding the Lombardi Trophy and a picture of Patrick Mahomes, who was 6 years old at the time. There's an 18-plus year difference between Tom Brady's age and Patrick Mahomes' age. By the way, Derek Nnadi is a starting defensive end in that 3-4 defense that Kansas City uses. And my story about Derek Nnadi, I won't have a chance to tell it this, when we lost to Oregon, we took it on the chin in the second season, or the first season of the college football playoffs. We played Oregon in the semifinals out in the Rose Bowl, and we got drilled in the second half, and the bottom fell out. And I went down to do post-game locker room interview with players and with coach, and the only player that was in that locker room when I got there that was willing to talk was Derek Nnadi. And everybody was so down in the dumps, I guess you would say. But I'll never forget Derek taking the time to do an interview with me after a game in which his team had been thoroughly defeated. So I'll wave to Derek Nnadi, and I hope he doesn't make a sack in the ballgame.
Mm. There you go. Hey, best to Miss Ann and your family. Thank you, partner. Appreciate you doing this.
Go Noles. Go Bucks. Fire them cannons.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Legendary Gene Deckerhoff. Fire the cannons. Well, he is living large, isn't he? Florida State basketball doing great. Tampa Bay Bucks in the Super Bowl. It can't get much better than that.
No. I've got something for 9:45 that he brought up, and we're going to discuss, and it involves math.
Oh, no. Be careful. Oh,
yeah. Just brought to our attention. What a treat to welcome Myron Metcalf to this show. I know he's been a guest of yours on Off Campus, right?
Yeah, Myron was with me last week on my SiriusXM show. And just, again, if you are a I said this on the air last week. I'll say it now. If you are a college basketball junkie, you got to follow Myron because he is involved with everything and knows all. He was really good last week on the air with radio. And we were like, hey, man, let's bring him up for TV. And with that said, ta-da. Snap your fingers, you got them. And Myron, first of all, good morning, man. We appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
There's a lot to cover. And again, we're going to throw the dart specifically at the ACC with this particular go-around. I thought it was kind of important last night for Duke to, number one, take care of business at home and really kind of grind and be more aggressive than what we've seen in the last couple of weeks with the Blue Devils. You can't put dirt on the grave yet. There's still talent, and there's still Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah, and I think the way that Jalen Johnson played, the way he finished, and the way Matthew Hurt performed, I mean, you look at that duo and go, okay, you can see how they could lead Duke down the stretch. I mean, that's what we kind of been waiting for, right? Who's going to be that combination of two or three guys to be consistent? DJ Stewart has scored 14 or more in the last four wins that Duke has had. Matthew Hurt has played great. And then Jalen Johnson shows up at the end and says, hey, man, let me close the show. I'm the dude. And I think if Duke can do that going forward, they'll have an opportunity to excel and maybe make a run and get to the tournament because I don't think it's over for Duke. There's certainly some life left.
Myron, and I brought this up a week or so ago when Johnson's minutes kind of came back to normal, if you will. I mean, I know he got a cup of coffee in a ball game early and then he came back at full length. And I just felt like that Jalen Johnson and Matthew Hurt had to learn to play together as much as anything else. And I'll apply it to the other team that won last night. I think Baycott, Brooks, and Sharp have to learn to play together and play collaboratively with Love and Davis and even with Anthony Harris in terms of Carolina. And that continuity thing is starting to seep over to a lot of teams, it looks like.
Yeah, to me, honestly, based on everything that's happened with the virus and the delays and the later start to the season, it's almost mid-December in a normal year. I mean, that's what you're looking at. This is mid-December basketball in terms of that continuity and that chemistry. These guys did not have the same amount of time to get together before the season. There have been pauses. There have been canceled games. All things that have never happened before. So that's why I think you are starting to see some of these guys click with the young guys, especially as these freshmen begin to figure it out. It's taken them a little more time this year, considering everything that's going on. But I certainly think North Carolina and Duke are beginning to find the right formula. And maybe they haven't looked apart up until this point, but late February, early March, both could be dangerous teams.
Myron, you're allowed to change your mind 100 times between now and whenever March Madness really does get started, we hope on time. But if I said to you, late January, the best team in the ACC right now is fill in the blank.
It's Virginia, right? Like, if Virginia doesn't lose that weird game to San Francisco, you know, they're a number one seed for Joe Lunardi, certainly. They lost to Gonzaga, which everybody lost to Gonzaga, so that's not new. The way they're shooting the ball, I mean, I think they're making like 42% of their threes so far, 58% of their shots inside the arc. They're offensively just unstoppable. J-Hub having a senior like that, a veteran like that, that you can go to and trust in times like these. And then you bring in the transfer, Sam Hauser, who now is finally who's starting to assert himself as well. And they're just playing well together. So to me, Virginia is the best team right now. I don't know if that'll hold, but I think that's a good bet if you want to count on them to win the ACC title.
But Myron, are they the most dangerous team in the ACC?
The most dangerous team in the ACC right now is a Florida State team that's made 44% of their threes so far in ACC play. I mean, nobody gives Leonard Hamilton credit. Like, no one wants to count him among the best coaches in America for whatever reason. But that team is playing incredible basketball. Scotty Barnes, NBA prospect. MJ Walker, the former five-star recruit who's now a veteran on that team. That Florida State team is dangerous, and that's not a squad that I would want to play in March. So it'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds. But then you just don't know what to expect of Duke and Carolina. Carolina's won 6 of 7. Duke finally snapping that 3-game losing streak. So we're going to see how this all unfolds. But I think the ACC is going to be a very fun league in February.
All right, I'm going to throw one other team in the mix here, Myron, and they play tonight, and that's Louisville. They're at Clemson. Clemson's certainly been Jekyll and Hyde, especially since returning from the COVID. They've been actually brutal. But before that, they've got some really quality wins. But I want to concentrate on Louisville because when Malik Williams returns, and we don't know when that's going to be, but assuming he does at some point in time in February for argument's sake, that backcourt of Jones and Johnson, the whole DNA of Louisville basketball, while we talk Virginia and Florida State and the Blue Bloods with Duke and Carolina getting in the mix, Louisville's sitting there going, hey, you know what? We can really cause some problems when they get whole. Where would you put Louisville in that mix moving forward, assuming they do get Williams back?
Well, I think they're definitely in that group after Florida State and Virginia. Here's my thing about Malik Williams. How does he come back?
Yeah.
Like, who is he when he – because I think that's a lot of pressure on any player who's missed this time due to injury, and now everyone's sort of saying, hey, listen, this is the guy who's going to change everything. I hope he's 100%, and you're right. If he's 100%, we know what that team can be. I mean, they were in a battle against Duke, you know, over the weekend, and Duke has a chance to win that game, and Louisville just doesn't let them. So I think Louisville is one of those feisty teams that we're going to be paying attention to more going forward. I just think if you're looking at ceilings, Duke and Carolina have the higher ceiling to me, but they have higher ceilings probably than Florida State and Virginia too, and they're not on top. So it's just going to be fun to see how it all unfolds. I hope Malik comes back healthy 100%. But I got to see how he comes back first.
So, Myron, and we're always looking for fresh perspective on our show. That's kind of the one of the things we always kind of hope we get from guests. And you've given us one here a little bit, because while we certainly honor and respect what Virginia and Florida State have done, you're not selling on Duke and Carolina. You're buying Duke and Carolina and their kind of return to prominence. I don't want to say return to the top, but their return to a spot in this race.
Yeah, I would say every team in America that's counting on freshmen in this pandemic season is a month behind. Every single team in America. These freshmen cannot be judged the way we've judged freshmen in the past. At this point in most years, freshmen are starting to look like sophomores. That hasn't happened with America's freshmen because they haven't had the same opportunities that the past generation did. So now you're starting to see R.J. Davis in North Carolina kind of figure it out. You're starting to see Jalen Johnson and Duke kind of figure out their roles. And that, to me, is what makes Duke and Carolina dangerous. North Carolina has figured it out 6 or 7 games they've won. But remember, they've also played 16 games to Duke's 11. Duke, as a team, once they get to 15, 16, 17 games, I think they'll look a lot like North Carolina in terms of building some of the momentum. If you've got Matthew Hurt and Jalen Johnson as your two best players, I don't know if anyone in the league, I know no team in the league can match that when they're playing well, and they did last night. That's their potential. North Carolina's winning off consistency right now, but they still have to prove that they can beat the top tier in this league consistently. So we'll see how it all unfolds. But no, I'm buying both of those teams right now based on what I've seen.
Myron, probably the most surprising team so far, and there's a couple, but it's got to be Virginia Tech, all right? Mike Young's done a great job where they were picked before the season. Really nobody in their right mind outside their locker room thought that, oh, that's an upper third team of the ACC. They've gotten off to a terrific start. They're on the road tonight at Notre Dame, but they're also going on the road without Radford, and he's suspended indefinitely. How big an impact do you think that is on this team, and where do you think Virginia Tech moves forward as far as all these other teams you're talking about with momentum and trying to jump in the top third of the league where Virginia Tech currently finds themselves?
You know, when I got that announcement about Radford, I thought, man, this is devastating. I mean, this is deflating, and this is the kind of loss with all the unknown capacity that can take the wind out of your sails. It does change things for them. But I also think Mike Young, to your point, is a big reason why they're here. Like, in a year like this where the rosters haven't had continuity, there have been pauses, delays, coaching has never been more important. And Mike Young's one of those dudes where if you ask coaches around the ACC who's the best coach in this league, who's one of the better coaches that people don't talk about, they'll tell you Mike Young. And if you ask teams around the country, they'll say the same thing. So, for me, having a guy like that on the sideline is the reason you've reached this point. But I do think that is a significant loss. But the bottom of the ACC is sort of undefined. Clemson was good. Now they're struggling. A lot of teams are in that same boat. So I'm not going to write them off completely, but that is a major loss that they have to find a way to overcome.
All right, Myron, I want to go big picture here. We ran a cut from Dan Gavitt earlier in our program today, talking about, he was on with Jeff Goodman and Rob Doster on their podcast, Field of 68, about kind of, you know, what he's hoping the NCAA tournament environment will be like. You see college basketball, you know the ACC, but you also know the bigger picture. How concerned are you about, A, the opt-outs of conference tournaments, of teams from conference tournaments, and B, the confidence level you have in us being able to get to the finish line for the Division I men's basketball championship?
I mean, I've been consistent. I guarantee we will have an NCAA tournament. I don't know what it'll look like. I can't guarantee 68 teams. So we'll get there. But my problem is we have to have a plan for what happens if there's a positive test. Do you remove that player from the tournament? Do you remove that team? Do you delay the tournament? And it sounds like Gavitt is saying, we're going to go forward one way or the other. And that, to me, is the thing that makes me hesitate, because the reality is there's going to be a chance that there is a positive test. How do you respond to that? I think conference tournaments around the country are up in the air, because you got to think about this, right? If you're a team that's earned a favorable seed in the NCAA tournament based off your regular season performance, do you want to travel the week before the NCAA tournament and all the protocols attached to that and risk something happening? Or do you want to just buckle down on your own campus, test negative 7 times, which is the requirement for the NCAA tournament, and then be on your way to Indianapolis? I think you're going to see teams, leagues cancel tournaments, and I think you're going to see good teams say, you know what, I'm not interested. We're going to stay home and just get ready for the NCAA tournament. So I think that will happen here in the coming weeks and months.
All right, this is not a fair question, and this is a big picture question. But I'm going to ask you anyhow, because I know you're a junkie and you like stuff like this. And you're allowed, again, to change your mind next time we have you on. If I gave you Baylor and Gonzaga or the field for the tournament, whatever it looks like, whether it's 68, 48, 22 teams, I don't know what it's going to look like. Would you take those two behemoths at the top or the field?
Okay, you got to let me change my mind 4 weeks from now, right?
Fair enough.
Right
now.
Absolutely.
I'm taking Baylor over the field because I think they have separated themselves. I think Michigan's a good team. They're not Gonzaga good. They're not Baylor good. Iowa's a good team. Virginia's a good team. They are not on Baylor's and Gonzaga's level. You look at Baylor and Jared Butler and what he's doing, NBA prospect, Wooden Award candidate. They have just destroyed teams. They've been a dominant force, and they were a dominant force a year ago, too. In Gonzaga, what they've done offensively, I mean, this is the St. Louis Rams under Kurt Warner, just the way they score in buckets like that. So I would pick Gonzaga and Baylor, but if you call me 4 weeks from now, I might have a different opinion.
Okay, fair enough. Keep up the great work, man. You're good stuff. Hey, I love talking to you.
I'm going to tell you this. There's two things that just came out of that. First of all, you're on record taking Baylor and Gonzaga, and you just made your next appointment for Packer and Durham. I mean, there we go, right, Mark? It worked out good for you, Myron.
Anytime.
Yeah,
anytime.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Final segment of a Wednesday. I really do like that Myron Metcalf joined us, because I think he is really good. He is, like I said, if you are a college basketball junkie, you need to read and see everything he does. He is all over it, man. He can talk about anything you want from that perspective. And Gene Deckerhoff, legendary figure. And Doug, again, what an unbelievable run. And he's got his new dog, Henley. It's awesome. Life is good, man. Life is good. It's good to see good things happen to good people, right? That's the deal.
Yeah, he is. He's one of the best. By the way, time to highlight Athletes of the Week here on the Packer and Durham television program. Wrestling, Isaac Trumbull of NC State, part of them extending that dual streak. You see women's tennis, men's tennis, swimming and diving for both the men and women. Congratulations to all, Mr. Packer.
It's just good. Hey, it's just good to see swimming and diving and tennis and all this other stuff taking place.
I mean,
how about that? The fact that the student athletes have put in the work and now have a chance to showcase what's happening, that's the best news. Absolutely best.
All right. Something came up in the Gene Deckerhoff interview I want to discuss with you.
Okay.
Gene mentioned that it's 4.5 hours from Tallahassee to Tampa.
Right.
In his commute to be the voice of the Seminoles and the voice of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. His commute's 4.5 hours. You've always said that your commute is 16 steps?
16 steps from the kitchen to the basement. Yes, 16 steps. Some days easier than others.
You thought about that comparison in your two jobs compared to Gene's?
No, not at all. I mean, but you know, I go 16 steps and I stay down here for 18 hours because there's another job. There's another full-time job after this full-time job. So, no, I don't worry about commutes. I mean, you know what? Hey, you do what you got to do, man. Somebody writes you the check, you go get it done. So, yeah, I got a 16-step commute, but I'm working 18 hours a day, 5 days a week. So that's the way that works out. It all works itself out.
4.5 hours for Gene each way.
Hey, you don't have to go.
32 total steps for you.
You could say, listen, I have no interest in being the voice of the Tampa Bay Bucs. I'm not making it. I mean, it's hey, that's the beauty. That's the beautiful thing about living in this country. You don't have to accept it. You know, that's
you.
Part of the job description. If you got to drive 4.5 hours, you drive four. Hey, if they said to me, Pack, hey, we're taking the studio out of your home, and you and Wes are going to be in some new palatial uptown Charlotte studio. Great. Are you still writing the check? Mm-hmm. Yes. Good. I'll be there. You know, I'll figure it out. I don't care. If you want to do it, go for it. It's like having a sponsor by sponsor. You know, nothing gets done until something gets sold. Sponsored by sponsor. I heard that earlier today on the show. That's a new one. Don't know those guys.
Yeah, it is.
Look forward to meeting sponsor.
The four games tonight on the slate, two of them are on ACC Network. We start at 6 o'clock. Miami is at Florida State. Then at 8 o'clock, we'll send you to Raleigh for Wake Forest and NC State. Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, Louisville at Clemson. The other two ball games always available on the ESPN app. You have thoughts on these four games tonight?
I do.
Before we say goodbye?
I do. I think, for me, the most interesting game is Louisville-Clemson. Because, number one, I think Louisville's good. And, number two, Clemson is good. They have just been lousy for about 2 weeks. When do they get out of the funk? I mean, is it tonight? If not, they got to go to Duke Saturday. Looked like the Blue Devils gotten their act together a little bit last night. So, kind of curious to see what the Tigers do. Kind of curious to see what Louisville does. To me, that's the most interesting game. NC State's got to hold serve, right? First home game in 18 days. Haven't won a game since December 30th on a four-game losing streak. Wake Forest is playing with house money. Coming off a win, Steve Forbes guys play hard. Kind of curious to see what NC State does. If they want to get back into any kind of conversation, they got to win tonight, period. Virginia Tech, curious to see what do they look like without Radford and who steps up to fill that void with minutes and points. Does Aluma and Cone, do they finally get out of their 2-for-29 funk and get back to scoring and doing their thing? And for Notre Dame, if they make shots, they'll be a tough out at home. And Miami, Florida State, I mean, listen, I feel for Miami. Jim Larrañaga, the walking wounded, nobody is as beat up and banged up as they are. They've got to go to Florida State. The Noles have been fantastic for 2 weeks. Continue to shoot the lights out. So that's my gut for the week tonight in terms of the games tonight. So we'll have plenty to talk about tomorrow, not to mention the unveiling of the ACC football schedule at 9 a.m.
There you go. The ACC football schedule exclusively on Packer and Durham and the ACC Network tomorrow morning here at 9 a.m. And a quick note for you about Friday's show. Mark and I are excited. Our entire show on Friday morning starting at 7 a.m. We will talk to guests and coaches and ADs and other figures from around college athletics as we celebrate the 24-year run of John D. Swofford as the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference. So we look forward to doing that on the Friday edition of Packer and Durham. Tomorrow, 9 o'clock, we will do the football schedule, and we look forward to unveiling that and also getting some analysis behind it as well on what folks' first take is on the 2021 ACC football schedule.
We also unveil accounting tomorrow, so everybody can mock us on social media who have no earthly idea what we do for a living, which is fine. We can't do it until you see these four games tonight because it will have an impact on the standings.
Yep.
And Virginia and Florida State have been fantastic. and they are playing at a different level. I suspect that that will be your 1 and 1A. The Sweet 16, there's still some availability there for nominations. You'll find out what that is tomorrow. But accounting will be interesting. I'm also fascinated to see if you still got NC State at 6. That's when I'm really interested to see where you have the Wolfpack tomorrow, Wes. From me to you.
I think some of that is going to depend on tonight.
Oh, please.
I think some of that's going to depend on tonight.
If they win, there's no way they can be 6th.
Oh, if they can be 5.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Then I'm going to be accused of wearing Carolina blue again.
There's no way. No, they
is that Carolina blue you're wearing today, by the way?
I don't know. You know, it's the only thing it was clean at 4 a.m. That's how I roll. I shave, put whatever's on that's clean.
So you don't think the Wolfpack will be at 6 tomorrow?
No, shouldn't have been at 6 last week. Haven't won a game since December 30th. Tomorrow is January 28th. Can't be 6th.
Might be down.
Where they should have been last week. Just telling you.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.